Mets Musings is brought to you by FanDuel. FanDuel is the leader in one-day fantasy sports for money with immediate cash payouts, no commitments, and leagues from a dollar. Sign up at FanDuel.com and use the promo code METSMUSINGS. So remember, sign up at FanDuel.com and use the promo code METSMUSINGS.
Now it's time for some New York Mets baseball talk. Here's Gary Mack bringing you the latest news and analysis from Mets Nation and the world of baseball on another edition of Mets Musings.
And hello and welcome to episode number 241 of Mets Musings. Hope everybody had a great week out there, at least better than the Mets did. Boy, did they struggle. Dropped 2 out of 3 to Philly. Dropped 2 out of 3 to Miami. But ended the homestand thanks to Kevin Plawecki and his 2-run RBI single in the bottom of the 7th. He drove in Wilmer Flores and Astrubal Cabrera for the game's only 2 runs for the Mets. And thank goodness for that, because they wasted a great pitching the day before with Noah Syndergaard, and he lost 2-1. So, been a rough outing for the Mets. They start 3-5, but they go on a road 9-game road trip. Maybe a good thing at this point in time for them to get away from Citi Field. But let me remind you that we are having an outing to Citi Field. Yes. April 26th, and there's still tickets available. We are going as a group, Mets Musings, Boardwalk Battalion, and Brooklyn Baseball Banter, sponsoring a group outing to Citi Field. Just email me with the information. There's still tickets on sale, so we have a few seats left available, so check that out. And if you can make it on April 26th against the Cincinnati Reds, just drop me an email, and I'll forward it to the proper people to get the tickets and tell you how to get it. Well, the jersey that Mike Piazza wore after he hit his iconic post 9/11 home run has reportedly been purchased. As you know, there's been a big controversy about this. It had been gone to a private seller. He was going to put it up for auction. Mike Piazza came out, said he was not happy about it. His father said they were going to try to buy it. Well, as it turns out, 3 men have reached an agreement with Golden Auctions to purchase the jersey for $355,000. This is reported by the New York Post today. The jersey will be rotated between Citi Field, the 9/11 Memorial Museum, and the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, according to this report. So that's a good thing. No saying who the purchaser is, but somebody's going to buy it and send it to those 3 places to rotate it between those 3 places. And that's a nice thing. So they all get to share in this. The sales price is a record for a modern-day jersey, surpassing the $303,000 spent on the jersey Kirk Gibson wore when he hit his famous pinch-hit home run for the Dodgers in the 1988 World Series. And congratulations to Jacob DeGrom. Him and his wife had their first child, the son Jackson Anthony DeGrom, born on Monday night, weighed in at 7 pounds, 12 ounces. DeGrom missed his turn on Wednesday because of an injury, a sore lat muscle. He will rejoin the Mets in Cleveland, as far as we know, and he'll throw a bullpen session with the expectation he will pitch in the series in Philadelphia. So we're still on the fence with Jacob DeGrom. Don't know whether he's going to go DL or stay with the team. They've got to come to a decision. One of the moves that were made was Rafael Montero was brought up to the Mets, and Eric Campbell was sent to Vegas. And first victory in Columbia Fireflies franchise history goes down in a record book as a special one. On Saturday night, Thomas McElraith, Alex Palsha, and Johnny Magliozzi combined to no-hit the Charleston River Dogs at Joseph P. Riley Jr. Park. With the help of catcher Jose Garcia, the trio struck out 13 batters and led Columbia to a 9-0 win. Saturday was McElrath's first start of the season, and the Texan cruised through six innings, allowing just two walks and striking out six. Palsha was the first arm called upon out of the pen. He faced six batters in the seventh and eighth, struck out four. With plenty of offense support, a 9-0 lead, Magliosi took the rubber for the start of the ninth. He fanned aside to clinch the no-hitter. So congratulations to go out for the Columbia Fireflies, the new A affiliate of the New York Mets, as they left Savannah and moved to Columbia, South Carolina. And I think that brings us up to date with all the news in Metsyland. Don't forget that outing, April 26th, going to Citi Field, the Boardwalk Battalion Mets Musings, and the Brooklyn Baseball Banter. So check it out. Drop me an email, and I'll put you in touch with the proper authorities. All right, we'll take a break and be back. I got two special guests on tonight. It's going to be great, so you're going to enjoy it. So we'll check back with them after this.
Hey, baseball fans and book fans as well. This is Frank Nappy, author of the Legend of Mickey Tussler series, inviting all of you to learn more about my protagonist, Mickey Tussler, an incredible pitching prodigy who has autism. Follow Mickey's journey as he captures the hearts of fans everywhere with his blazing fastball and indomitable spirit. Please visit Amazon or www.franknappy.com for more information.
Hi, this is the world-famous Mr. Brewtown of BrewtownSports.Podomatic.com. You know, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Brewtown Sports. You can also listen to the show at Stitcher.com, TuneIn.com, and iTunes.com. And we've got the new one. It's called BrewtownRadio.Webley.com. But the one that I'm most proud of being on is BaseballPodcast.net. It is the home of great baseball talk shows. Check it out, my show and all kinds of other programs all about Major League Baseball. So check it out. That's baseballpodcast.net, the home for great baseball talk shows.
The Phillies and Mets rivalry has never been better. Hi, my name is Rich Baxter, and I host Phillies Talk Podcast. I hope you'll join me along with my co-host, James Jim Mulry, as we talk all about the Phillies all season long. That's Phillies Talk Podcast at FightinPhillies.com. And now back to Gary Mack and this great edition of Mets Musings.
And welcome back to Mets Musings. Gary Mack here with you as I am every week. And joining me tonight is a co-author of a brand new book. His name is Howie Karpin, and the name of the book is Kiner's Corner, Ralph Kiner and Kiner's Corner, History of Kiner's Corner, and really a history of the Mets. Howie, welcome to the show, and tell us a little bit how you got the idea for this book.
It's nice to be here, first off, and a number of times a friend of mine with a good friend of mine who's a big Mets fan I grew up with, he'd always, you know, kind of hint to me, because I've books before, that somebody should do a book on Kiner's Corner. And then Mark Roseman and I co-authored Shoot the Thrill, History of Hockey Shootout. And it was Mark's idea to do the book on Kiner's Corner. I was kind of lukewarm to it in the beginning. But then as it went along, it was more fascinating. We found a lot of information, and lo and behold, it became a book.
Quite a book it is. It's really a terrific read. It's an easy read. You take a lot of stories from a lot of the players and that were on the show and how they got on the show and people that worked on the show. Did you have a hard time contacting these people, and how did you go about picking the people that you have?
Well, Mark did a lot of the legwork. He did. He set up a lot of the interviews. I did my own, you know, interview. Basically, wrote the text once Mark gave me the transcription of the interviews, and that was his idea to get the players from the past, and you know, try to fill it up with four decades of guests. We were lucky to didn't get everyone wanted, but we got 32 who appeared on the show and big part of the book.
This is Kiner's Corner. A lot of people don't realize what a history it has, and it was really one of the first post-game shows in baseball history.
Yeah, that's what made it fascinating. You look at it as like a pioneer, almost a precursor to what it was today, but it was more pure, it was more natural, and you know, Ralph turned out to be a gem as a broadcaster, just like he was a Hall of Famer as a player. He kind of had a natural interviewing skill. He brought out the best in the players because they trusted him.
And, you know, as you say, he was quite a natural at this. And when you watch it as a kid, I remember thinking how kind of corny it was and homey. But as you get older, you realize how relaxing he was and what a good interview he was. And you guys really brought that out in the book.
The show, what kind of broadcaster he was, because there's been so many books on him as a player. Obviously, we had a touch on that in the beginning, but, you know, this is him, the broadcaster. And that was the idea, like that, in the book.
Yeah, and he certainly, he was a great player, and he turned out to be a great broadcaster, and it was all pretty much by accident. Who knew he was going to be this good as a show? Now, you also brought up, interestingly enough, what each player got when they went on the show. And that was kind of interesting because how it changed over the years.
It was a pretty good idea, the gift certificates. And some guys actually got cash from Ralph for coming on. Ralph, you know, would actually throw a $100 bill.
Well, we've had some technical difficulties. And I know you're on a tight schedule and have to run.
Yeah, I got my other job here at Sirius.
Okay, thanks so much, Howie.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Now, we're joined now by Mark Rosenman, the other co-author of this book, Kiner's Corner. Down on a Corner, Ralph Kiner and Kiner's Corner. And Mark, I was talking to Howie about how you guys, roughly how you got the idea for the book. And he said a lot of the impetus was from you, and you did a lot of the legwork. Could you tell us a little bit that, what exactly it was like putting this all together?
Well, Howie and I did our first book together, Shoot to Thrill, and it was a great experience. We really enjoyed it. And then, you know, we cover the Rangers, and, you know, I cover the Mets. I see Howie when he's the official scorer at Citi Field. So we're always thinking, about a week after Ralph Kiner passed away, I was in the midst of getting my house ready to sell and, you know, do some things around the house. So I had this wall unit that had been built into the house when we first moved in like 1985 or 86, and in removing it to put some new wood flooring down from the top of the wall unit, about 150 Betamax tapes fell all over the floor. And I reached down and I picked up the very first one, and it was New York Mets opening day 1985. Wow. And I'm saying, oh, wow. So I run into my garage and I actually found my Betamax deck, hooked it up to my computer, you know, fast forward and said, please be there, please be there. And sure enough, opening day, Mookie Wilson, Gary Carter on Kiner's Corner. And I just watched it, and I said, wow, this is unbelievable. Then I saw Howie a couple of days later, and I said, Howie, no book has been done on Kiner's Corner. I said, you know, with all our contacts and all the different players that, you know, I know, we can talk to them, and I think it'd be a great idea for the book. And we pitched it, and the publisher loved it, and we ran with it.
Well, as I told Howie, it is a terrific book. I really enjoyed it. I got an advanced copy to read. And being of that age, I go back to 62 with the Mets. So I remember the old set in the Polo Grounds. And I actually did, in the 90s, I think it was, sit on the set in Shea Stadium. But it wasn't the original set, but it was still one of the great sets of Kiner's Corner. One of the last sets, I think, of Kiner's Corner, as we knew it, and what a thrill it was! But it literally was a corner of a closet, almost.
Absolutely, and the cameras are right in the guys' faces, and it was something back in the day, you know, that these players were not accustomed to. This was not like it is today, where there's media coverage 24/7 around the team. This was basically end of the game. In your uniform, sweating, run down, sit down with Ralph for 15 minutes and go over the game. And actually, you know, some of the guys like Tim Harkness, you know, they didn't have video replay back in the day. So Tim Harkness hit a home run, and, you know, here he was in Kiner's Corner looking at it and just really analyzing his swing, because they didn't have the technology we have today where they get every single pitch, you know, broken down to them on their iPad.
And I was, again, I hate to keep saying this, but I was talking to Howie about how when I was younger, it was kind of a, you know, you watched it as a kid and you thought, boy, this is kind of a homemade job TV show. But as you get older, you get to appreciate it more and really get to understand what a great job Ralph kind of did with this show.
It's interesting because as we get older and as baseball has evolved and as we are as fans, just 2 days ago I was out at the Mets-Marlins game and I was speaking to Lenny Harris and Barry Bonds. And just now when, you know, Barry Bonds is a hitting coach, they have to deal with rotation velocity and, you know, the two pitchers that night, you know, Syndergaard and Fernandez, they were talking about how those two pitchers are the perceived quickest to the mound, from the mound to the home plate. You know, we didn't have that. It was a much simpler game in some respects. I think it was pure. And when you would have a guy on, you know, Kiner's corner, whether it be a Willie Mays or a Willie McCovey or an Ed Charles talking about, you know, that he got a pitch and, you know, it was just a little up and in and he was able to handle it. Now everything's about exit velocity and, you know, the shift. And it's just, it was so much simpler. And I think that was some of the beauty of the game. And I think today we're missing out on some of that.
And I think, in a way, that's what the beauty of Kiner's Corner was, because it was very simple. It was really not much to the show, but yet it was so well done. And as we said, Ralph was so relaxed. I think the players like to come in. They like to be relaxed. And he really got a lot out of the plays, except for Choo-Choo Coleman.
Which was interesting because Choo-Choo Coleman was, that's, you know, the urban legend, the story goes, and it was one of the people I really, it's funny because in the Shoot the Thrill book for Howie and I, it was a little easier. You know, when we decided to do that book, it became the perfect storm because the Rangers marched all the way to the Stanley Cup final. So every other night at Madison Square Garden, there were 20 or 30 people, you know, whether it be general managers, scouts, executives, former coaches, we could go and we could talk to them. And before, you know, knew it, we had like over 300 some odd interviews to pare down to, we put about 200 into that book. But this was a little different. This was, you know, I had a clear vision that I really wanted to target about 10 players from each decade, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And one of the ones, of course, was Choo-Choo Coleman. So whereas Shoot the Thrill was not as much detective work, this was. This was searching the internet, paring down, trying to get a contact. And when I got in touch with him, and to this day, Choo-Choo Coleman still says very little, but the whole, he calls me Bub. Spoiler alert, you'll have to get the book to find out if that's true or not.
And it's an interesting array of players that you have, because not all of them, as Met fans, we remember a lot of these guys, but a lot of them weren't really big stars. I mean, for instance, you have Kevin Coble here in the book, and you mentioned already Tim Harkness. Did you have a certain selection that you went with the players that you wanted to get, or was it just happenstance and who you could reach?
It was a combination of the two. We targeted specific people for specific games. I do have a big database. I've been a Met Fantasy camper for the last 3 or 4 years, so I know a lot of the older players, have very good relationships with them, covering the current Mets and through their public relations office, through Jay Horowitz, was able to contact some others. So the, you know, the one person, which is interesting, that's kind of in there with some of the stars like Keith and some of Kenny Singleton are specific games, and they've all been on Kiner's Corner. There is one player, a non-Met, who was not on Kiner's Corner that actually is in the book because it was very interesting, and that's Ricky Horton of the Cardinals. And he grew up upstate New York, was a New York Met fan, and always loved the Mets growing up. 69 was the Miracle Mets. He said he had posters in his room. Ron Swoboda was his idol. In fact, he told me a story which I related to Ron Swoboda, and he just, you know, fell over laughing. Ricky Horton, I believe, was with the Chicago White Sox playing the Yankees during Old Timers Day. And he's in the visiting dugout, and all the ex-Yankees are filtering through the two different dugouts to come out for, you know, Old Timers Day. And at that point, I think DiMaggio was still alive, and Mantle and Ford, and he's like talking to all of them, like just talking to them, like, because he grew up, he idolized some of these guys. Ron Swoboda came out of the dugout. He said he was speechless. He couldn't get the courage to go up and speak to Ron Swoboda, which I just found fascinating. And he pitched, I believe it was opening day of 86, if I remember correctly, or 84. And he pitched opening against Dwight Gooden, and he basically exited the game with a 2-1 lead. The bullpen lost the lead. The game went to extra innings, and Ozzie Smith ended up winning the game with an RBI in the late innings. He was still slated to go on Kiner's corner because he had a great start against Dwight. And as it would be, he was doing Cardinals radio with Mike Shannon, and it ran too long, so they had to get Ozzie on Kiner's corner instead. And he never was asked to do Kiner's corner again. And it was one of the biggest regrets of his career.
It's interesting. The other point that we discussed, too, was the gifts that they used to get. And how excited, in fact, I believe Mackie Sasser still has his gift.
Yes, Mackie Sasser still has his leather jacket from some leather store in the Roosevelt Field. One of the players that I grew up in, again, you were right about the collection of players, and some of them, I'm 55, so you know, there's certain players that just for some reason still hold a place in my heart, and one of them was Danny Frisella for some reason. And I always loved Danny Frisella, and I was able to speak to his widow, and she remembered vividly, you know, the Kiner's corner and all the wives and whoever were friends hanging outside of the stadium waiting for them to come out into the parking lot for Danny, or whether it be Wayne Garrett, whoever it was, to show the $50 so they could all go out for dinner after the game in Queens. So Danny's Frisella, you know, through Pam Frisella is in the book.
And as you say, it was a simpler time and a purer game back then. But it's interesting how a $50 and these guys really wanted, they were happy to be on and get that $50 or the Armatron watch that some got. I think Barry Lyons got a watch, if I'm not mistaken, and just terrific. And there's some guys from behind the scenes. How did that work out, trying to get those guys?
Steve Oldbaum and Bill Webb, all the executive producers, we try to get in contact with them because they also have stories. Howie got in touch with a few of them as well. Because they really knew the inner workings of it. And it was very important. Gary Myers, the NFL columnist, actually was an intern. Very interestingly, he would alternate. And if they needed him, they called him as an intern to work with Ralph. And he tells a story of how his hand actually made it on a lot of the WOR broadcasts because he was the person in charge of rolling. If you remember the home runs and average, and that you know they would show underneath the player.
Yeah.
That changed, and the way they changed that was with this dial, which was always, you know, moving, and you would have to get it before the camera would go on the shot. And Gary missed a few times, so he said a lot of his hands made it into the telecast in the 70s.
And you had a book, it has the foreword written by Tim McCarver, who, of course, worked a number of years with Ralph, and really, to me, revitalized Ralph Kiner's career in a way. He was, I think, starting to get tired and old, and I think Tim McCarver brought him, brought some life back into Ralph.
Absolutely. Phil Mushnick spoke about that in the book as well, and Timmy did as well. So Tim was a very big part of the revitalization. But, of course, you know, the team doing well. If Tim McCarver was there in the Willie Montanez days, I'm not so sure he would have redeemed it. But, yes, Tim did have a huge part in bringing more to the table with Ralph than any other broadcaster.
And there's a picture in the book of you sitting with Mr. Kiner in one of the Kiner's corner, and that had to be a big thrill for you.
Yeah, it's a fond memory, and it's a little scary too because there's a number of pictures from me in the 80s with the players. And,
yes.
And then, you know, you take a look at, you know, Ralph as a player to Ralph and I sitting down, and time has passed us both by, but it's still, you know, a vivid memory of those kind of corners, and it's something, and everyone you speak to, even Howie Rose, it was a big part of his childhood as well. So you speak to Met fans in the demographic of between 42 and 55, and you mentioned Kindness Corner, or you play that theme song, and instantly there's a smile across everyone's face.
Yeah, because, you know, you didn't get to see these players that much, and this gave you an opportunity, I mean, to see Willie Mays. And I grew up in a Giants household. My mother was a big Giants fan. So Willie Mays was this guy that played on the other coast. But to actually see him on television and talking to Ralph Kina, and it made me go out and want to read about more about a lot of these players. And of course, in the early years, there was a lot more away players on rather than home players, because just how bad the Mets were, especially in 62. But it was always a thrill to see some of these big stars of the day, because, as you said, we didn't have the technology. We didn't have all of these wall-to-wall baseball games on as we do now.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know what? When you were saying that about the opposing teams and the players being on more than the Mets for a number of years, thinking about that when you said that, for me, Kindness Corner brought my baseball cards to life. There was no ESPN. There was no we had Sports Extra. So once a week there was, you know, maybe 4 minutes of Met news. But after a game, even if the Mets lost, there was still more baseball. So you'd be sitting there, and maybe you have a Mike Shannon St. Louis Cardinals card, and then there's Mike Shannon who got the hit, who's sitting there with Ralph. And just players that you might not have known other than just seeing them play. Tito Fuentes, just all these different players, you know. And then, of course, the stars. You got Steve Carlton, you had Juan Marichal, you had, you know, Gaylord Perry. When they would go on, it was something that you watched as a kid because you wanted to, we all had that thirst for knowledge of baseball because it was our passion back then.
Exactly right. And Ralph even did some different things. I don't know if I want to call it a theme show, but I can remember a show where he had the Alou brothers, the three Alou brothers that played for the Giants on. And he did different things like that and brought different people together on that show. And it really, it's too bad that there aren't, I believe it's in your book, that there aren't a lot of copies that survived of it. Is that true?
It's incredibly sad, but it's true. In fact, SNY has contacted us because we basically have the most of anybody around, and I've posted them on Facebook and YouTube. If you go to Sports Talk NY on YouTube, you can see there's roughly about 15 Kindness Corners up there, and that's thanks to Joe Barbaroso and a couple of other people, because that's the other part of the detective work, drilling down, trying to find some. I had like five or six I came across. I just kept on drilling down, figuring. I remember in the 80s when, you know, people didn't have superstations or cable and they weren't syndicated and there was no Major League Baseball package. People that grew up Met fans that might have to relocate for work were still Met fans. And what they used to have to and send it to them. So I kept on doing these Google searches for these different forums, and I found one that still survived out there on the internet from the 80s with all different email addresses. I had 100 emails, probably got like 95 bounce backs that they were not valid addresses anymore. And I got a few back that people still had the tapes, and I was able to get them and was able to digitalize them and put them up on the computer. And it's pretty cool to watch them now.
Well, I hope there's some old ones there. I'm going to go check that out when we get done. All right. Well, I want to thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule. I know you're a little bit depressed because the Rangers lost last night, but hopefully they'll get back and get on with the series, and Lundqvist will be okay.
Yeah, that's the big if. If the King is good to go, he's similar to, for the Mets, he's there, Matt Harvey, he's there, Noah Syndergaard. It all starts with him in goal. So if hopefully, you know, there are no issues with his eye and he's ready to go Saturday.
All right. So, Mark, tell us a little about Sports Talk New York on WLIE 540. You host, co-host that show every week?
Every Sunday night. If you are a fan of Ralph Kiner and that type of interview, you'd love our show. We usually have two long-form guests on every week. We talk a lot of Mets baseball. We do each sport. And we have an interactive webpage as well. You can go there. Every single podcast for the last 9 years of every guest that's been on is up there. Our YouTube page is connected there for post-game locker room interviews with the Rangers, on-field interviews, is one with Curtis Grandison, is one with Barry Bonds from 2 days ago, all on the webpage as well. And also we have a Facebook page for the Down on the Corner, which is awesome because what I've been doing is each day leading up to the book, we post 69 every single championship year. Every day we post one of the games from there, and we ask people to take a look at the box score and say they're the director and who goes on Kiner's Corner. So that's we've had some fun with that.
That's a terrific idea. That's great. And the book is available at Amazon. You can pre-order it.
Pre-order it, and if you don't want to wait for the pre-order, you can go to sportstalknylive.com, and the book is right there. Click, order it, send me a message, and you'll get it autographed as well.
Oh, wow. Okay, and you can also watch your show on Ustream, as I did last Sunday. You had a great guest on there, a friend of mine, Eric Sherman. He was on, and he's a terrific guest. I've had him on here, and he's got a great book out as well. But everybody go out and buy Down on a Corner, Ralph Kiner and Kiner's Corner, written by Mark Rosenman and Howie Carpin. And, Mark, thanks so much, and I'll definitely contact you to get you on again, and we can talk more Mets.
You got it. Anytime. Really appreciate it, Gary.
And we'll be back right after this. 516-619-6341. That is the comment voicemail hotline. If you'd like to be a part of the show and drop us a line, leave us a comment or a voicemail question, anything at all, call that number, 516-619-6341. Or go to MetsMusings.com and click on that widget in the middle of the screen, and that's a speak pipe, and you can leave a voicemail right through your computer through your computer's microphone. Or if you prefer to do things the old-fashioned way, send us an email at MetsMusings@gmail.com. The Facebook page is facebook.com/groups/MetsMusings, and the Twitter handle is @MetsMusings1. And if you'd like to help out the show, check out our Patreon page. Check out the campaign at patreon.com/MetsMusings. Okay, it's time for the first minor league recap of the young season, and this comes from Max Metz. And Sacramento beat Las Vegas 6-1 last night. Second baseman TJ Rivera went 2-for-4 with a double. He's hitting .263 on a young season. The 51s are 2-3 and 2 games out of the division lead. And Binghamton beat Harrisburg 5-1 behind Dominic Smith. 2-for-3, Dominic Smith with an RBI. He's struggling a little bit, but he's got his average up now to .176. And starter Rainey Lara pitched in. He's starting pitcher. Pitched 5 innings, had 0 runs, gave up. And the B-Mets are at .500, 2-2 with a game and a half out. First baseman Michael Katz went 1-for-2. And Josh Edgen pitched 2/3 of a scoreless rehab relief, and St. Lucie beat Dunedin 7-2. St. Lucie is 5-2 and 1 game behind the Palm Beach Cardinals. Columbia beat Rome 3-2, and in their victory, it was 8 strikeouts by starter Chase Ingram and 2 scoreless relief innings by Alex Palsha. Fireflies are 4-3 on the season and 2 games behind the Charleston River Dogs. Well, that does it for this edition of the podcast. This edition is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. If you would like to help in keeping this podcast going, I urge you to check out our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/MetsMusings. So thanks for listening to this episode, and until next time, keep the faith, stay optimistic, and let's go Mets!